Guess what, Will?
What's that, Mango?
I've been trying to write a promo for our podcast, Part-Time Genius, but even though we've done over 250 episodes, we don't really talk about murders or cults.
I mean, we did just cover the Illuminati of cheese, so I feel like that makes us pretty edgy. We also solve mysteries like how Chinese is your Chinese food and how do dollar stores make money? And then, of course, can you game a dog show?
So what you're saying is everyone should be listening.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Su. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Craig Ferguson. The name of this podcast is Joy. I talk to interesting people about what brings them happiness. Joel McHale is about as tall as a person should be, and he's funny, and he's my friend. Here he is.
What were you doing when you were 18?
Oh, man. That's made me feel very nervous.
Yeah.
Let's see, 18, I was in a... What were you doing, Yuri? You were sporty, so that kind
of... I was very sporty.
That saved you probably from the world of drugs and
but
stuff.
But my brothers and I had already totaled 5 cars, and my dad was like, I'm going to have a tick. And he was like, I'm going to have a tremor because of you guys. You make me so nervous.
Well, how come you totaled cars? I mean, were you driving them, stealing them?
No, we just weren't great at it. Took us a while. You know, it's like learning a sport. We just were very lucky we didn't get hurt.
But I think of you like, you're kind of all American though. So when you were crashing those cars, you were crashing them in a wholesome, reasonably wholesome way.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
I crashed them into like a Walmart.
Yeah.
And I was very charitable. And you were
sober when you were crashing those cars.
Definitely. Though, you know, there was people in my high school who weren't. So, yeah, I really enjoyed my teenage years.
Did you really?
Like, I loved playing, like, I was terrible at school, but I loved playing sports and I loved driving.
Weren't you like a proper, like, football player, like a tight end, right?
Well, I played 1 year in high school and then I joined the team when I was a freshman in college out of sort of a whim. But as far like, so I had played a few years, but I played baseball and basketball. And
see, that's very impressive and wholesome and good. That's why you're in such great shape now, because you got into it when you were young.
Oh, no, this is desperation.
No.
Because some of my friends who were way better athletes, now they look like, you know,
like a
swollen alien.
That happens too. Like guys, wait.
Like they're a blob. Now they're just like a blob with multiple, you know, like the thing.
Well,
have you seen the thing?
How do you know that? But that could be great shape for the thing. I mean, that species.
Oh, you're right.
You know, I mean, you're applying
human. It could have been a very lean, lean thing that just devoured human beings. It was only devouring protein. It wasn't, there wasn't any carbohydrates.
It was on that diet. Was that diet again, the protein, the keto diet?
Keto with the Atkins.
Well, the thing is with those diets though, because I've tried them all, the keto one in particular, I think you poop like once every couple of weeks. It's not enough for me.
Well, I save it and date it.
And save it and date it.
Have it analyzed. No.
Salvador Dali used to do it. He used to like in his diary every morning, he would start talking about what his poop was like.
You're like the guy that one of the greatest painters ever.
Well, you know.
I feel like he was pretty...
He was okay. Come on. Yeah, he was a great draftsman, but something of a showman, I think.
You think the melting clocks were just a bit much?
Ah, come on.
Or the tiger bursting out of the gun?
No, you know what I like? I like a sort of blue-hued senorita on velvet. Now you got something. Elvis maybe on Velvet Elvis.
Who was the artist?
I think it was Modigliani.
Modigliani
yeah,
did that.
I think so, yeah. Oh. I think that's the one that made him get drunk afterwards. He's like, oh. What have I done? Was he Italian or French? I can't remember.
That sounded like neither.
And what have I done? I made a hell with Elvis. Now I must kill myself.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Now I would watch this.
See, I didn't think
series.
Of you. Are you an art aficionado? Are you like seriously?
No,
are you?
I'm good at faking it. Sarah is an art. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. Sarah's really smart with the art. She knows all that stuff.
I took one class in college, the history of Renaissance art. It was kind of a survey, and that really set me up great for parties.
So you could say to the girl, that's how you got Sarah, isn't it? You were like, yeah. Oh, do you like Velasquez?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It was like, you know, Giotto's chapel.
Oh, nice.
In Padua.
And then you could say you were born in Italy, because I always forget that, but you were born in Italy, so you can do the whole, what's the coming to go? I don't understand your language, everybody.
Yeah, a lot of this. You can't see it on the microphone, but I'm just taking the tips of my fingers. I'm doing a lot of this.
You know what that is? That's the upside down emus right there. That's what you do, the upside down emus.
Wait, where were you born?
New Zealand.
Were you really?
No.
I was born in
Scotland. Yeah. It was like, but
people bring up the Italian, like, oh, you were born in, like I had anything to really do with it other than appearing.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what age were you when you left Italy?
31.
Well, so you got a little bit of...
Two.
Yeah, but can you speak Italian?
No. What? I did lose my passport there. It got stolen. And I walked into the American consulate and they kept coming back. And because they saw that I was born in Italy, they were like, they were so confused. I'm like, I lost my passport. Do you have any bubble gum?
I hate Al Qaeda.
I don't know what's going on. I can't buy any peanut butter. And they were so like, you're not an Italian. I'm like, well, not kind of.
What's the coming to go? I can't find my passport. That's bad, isn't it?
No, it's good.
You know what? Do you know what happens in Glasgow? There's a big Italian community in Glasgow. And the Italians that like, especially like second generation, they speak Glasgow accents, but they have Italian Glasgow accents. So it's amazing sound. It's like, hey, how yous are doing? You come to my shop and maybe we come over here. You like the fish and chips? It's very, very strange.
I
love it.
That needs to be a show.
What, and Italian Glaswegians?
Yeah, that's a...
It's a great thing.
It's got to be a show. And I'm guessing the food game got upped.
Oh, my God. They changed the country. When the Italians and the Pakistanis and the Indians came to Scotland, they improved it by like 1,000%. Because up until that point, all we ate was like mud and then custard at Christmas, all made of potatoes.
Mud.
Mud and custard.
It was mud until Christmas and then back to mud in January.
Yeah, but you got custard for Christmas Day, made of mud. Mud custard, obviously.
I'm assuming now, I mean, obviously with the food revolution, now there's like high-end Scottish cooking where the haggis has never been better.
Yeah, I mean, and the haggis is like well, you're a foodie guy, aren't you?
I do like food.
But yet, you only eat one meal a day.
Yeah. It's a it's a duality that I...
Yeah, well, the Jungian duality, or maybe it's just a straight up eating disorder.
I hope so.
Do you think so?
I just thought it could be I try to keep below a certain weight. I want to be 122 pounds all the time.
Dude, that's never going to happen.
I have to lose, I have to lose 78 pounds.
Your arm weighs 122 pounds. Look at that arm. That's an amazing arm.
During the pandemic.
But only one. You look like a crab that lost the fight.
Well,
what happened?
I'm just...
just working one arm.
The claw got ripped off. During the pandemic, I was like, if I don't work out every day, I'm going to just...
But you're in great shape. Well, I mean, you look like you're 30 years old.
Thank you for saying that.
Well, it's
true. It's also the hair transplants that help too.
You've got a hair transplant and you work out.
Yeah, I transplanted all this down here up there.
Nah, I don't believe you because it would be much curlier and finer.
You have no idea what it's like down there.
Oh, I've heard.
This is the hair I always wanted.
Well, my hair?
Yeah.
You know what, my hair, man?
And you know what was great? Because you have some gray hair.
Yeah,
went gray early.
Yeah.
And it was hard to tell what your age was.
Not anymore.
Well, I disagree.
I'm 61 years old. I know. It's terrifying. I mean, like, when I get up in the morning, like, just stand up out of bed, like, crickety noises, like, tick, like all my bones click.
And your wife is like, oh.
You know, she thinks, who dropped the matches?
Did you get a hip replacement while you were sleeping?
I thought about it.
But you look great.
I'm okay. I also eat one meal a day. But what I do is I eat all day. It's a day
it
is
starts
one.
At 8 a.m. and ends.
I think I may have an eating disorder a little bit. I have an unhealthy, pathological relationship with food for sure. Because like I'm staying in a hotel right now, right? You know the drawer that has candy in it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I went to that drawer yesterday and I was like a raccoon. I just like ate everything, like the wrappers were all everywhere and everything. It's a mess. And I...
So if it's in front of you, you're going to eat it.
Yeah, I'm like the dog. You know, if you bring groceries home and you leave them in the room with me, I'll eat them.
See, I scream out loud, get behind me, Satan, when I see that candy. And sure, people in the other rooms complain.
Because they think Satan's in your
room. Right. But it's good for me to just declare it and then... And then I usually flush it all down the toilet with the cocaine.
I did that.
No way.
Yeah, I tried that. I was on tour and there was like, they give, you know, sometimes you go to play a casino or something, they say, oh, enjoy the chocolate basket, you know, so there was a basket of chocolate in my room and I was like, I don't know what to do because it was the middle of the night. So I dipped it in the toilet so that I wouldn't eat it.
And then you ate it.
Then I That's like, you know me.
But you burn.
Are you still doing stand-up and stuff like that around? Do you ever do it still?
I do. It's been harder. I take gigs like casino gigs where I'm like, I can get there, do it.
Yeah.
But I haven't had as much time to work on stuff. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of scrambling and writing jokes to where I'm going and talking about like,
that's all right. That's
here we are in Calgary.
Yeah.
So I have one more gig and then, yeah.
And you're not going to do it anymore?
Well, no, I love doing it.
Yeah, it's great. It's
you
fabulous.
Burn a lot of calories doing it.
I used to. I don't anymore. I just stand there now. I'm like Gaffigan now. I just stand there and say things. I'm like sweary Gaffigan. That's it.
I feel like Gaffigan's, he's beginning to move towards a... You know, it's getting
edgier.
Yeah, it's getting a little edgier.
Well, you know, Jim, when he started out, it was pretty edgy. And then he made the stylistic choice to stop swearing.
I couldn't do that.
No, I tried it. And then I tell you, I did it a little bit. I did a couple of shows with Leno and Arsenio Hall during the summer in casinos. And they said, you have to do a PG-13 show. So I did. And I kind of liked it.
You can't say fucking PG-13?
No, and I think you get one, but Arsenio went on first and he used it up. So that was
and you're like,
I'm like, oh, well, I can't
it's
do
not
it.
One, it's one for the night, one per person.
I don't know. I didn't want to risk it because, you know, people get mad at you.
I think Leno should come out with a special called Fucking Shit Up and just blow away. It would be huge.
He is an amazing stand-up. I mean, still, I was watching him because I'd never seen him live. And I was watching him like, damn, I get it. You know,
yes,
it's a different... Have you ever seen him live?
I have never seen him live.
It will blow your mind or some... It'll blow something.
Hard.
Something will get blown.
I did the car show with him.
Yeah. Oh, I did that.
Yeah, but it didn't. Obviously, it's not the same thing.
Well, he wasn't doing stand-up, but it's much the same. I said to him, I don't know if I know my act. And he said, just keep talking. They don't know the script. Just keep talking.
That's true.
So you should do that when you're worried about, do I have enough material? Just keep talking.
Oh,
and if it's not funny, they'll just think you're not that good, but that's all right.
Like, why?
They'll think he tried.
He stood up there and talked into the microphone. Yeah. I did do a show in Texas and they were like, I didn't realize it, but they wanted it to be a clean show.
Okay.
So.
Did you do it?
I opened up in prayer.
Right.
And said, dear God, please help me not to say fuck or shit so much.
Did you actually do that?
Yeah. And then I put out a swear jar and then, so there was like a bunch, it actually worked.
Did it? Did they forgive you?
They did. Well, the weird part is that like there was like four big, rich, like Yellowstone donors.
Right.
Two of them were very like conservative as far as talk. And then the other two were screaming fuck at me. They were like, say fuck, we don't care.
All right.
And so I was like, I don't know what to do.
It's the duality of man. It's right there. It's the Jungian dilemma. You know, it's one way or another way. It's Modigliani making the Velvet
Elvis.
You know,
it is. Do you think that when you stop swearing, do you feel like I'm betraying my country?
No, I feel like I'm doing better. I feel like I'm finally growing up. And then, I don't know, it's difficult. You know, when people say things like, the stuff that makes me angry is when people say, well, good comedian doesn't have to swear. Right. I'm like, well, so then Richard Pryor's not a good comedian.
Yeah, Eddie Murphy's a bad comedian.
Yeah, I mean, that's absurd. It's language, and language is glorious. And when you mention Scottish people and swear, nobody swears like Scottish people. It's beautiful. Scottish and Irish people, it's kind of like...
It flows so well.
Unbelievably wonderful sweariness. But yeah, I suppose I do feel like I'm betraying the country when I don't swear. So fuck it. I'm not gonna do it anymore.
Do your kids swear?
I'm afraid they do.
Yes, as do mine.
Yeah.
And my parents did not like swearing at all. So I felt...
Yeah.
When I got out of the house.
You just really let fly?
Well, look at this shit. Yeah, I think it was a reaction.
Did you leave the house early? I mean, were you out when you were young? Were you like 18, not, 17, 18?
Well, kind of. I went to college and moved out, but then...
Were you a dorm guy? Were you like, you know...
I was in a fraternity for one quarter.
And
I did not like it.
I can't imagine. You're too smart.
Oh,
you know, I think
you're
smart and you're sensitive. You really are. You'd lose your fucking mind in that world.
No, and so I moved back home, and because it was like I was like, this will be temporary. I'll finish out the year.
Yeah,
and then I just never did.
You stayed home for college.
Like my mom worked at the university I went to, so my mom and I drove every morning to college together.
You must have got so laid when you were in college, turning up with your mom.
Hey, who's getting out of that Toyota Camry? That's right.
But here's the thing.
Parked in the handicap spot.
But you and Sarah met pretty early on. I mean, you were young.
Yeah, I got married when I was 24.
And you're still married and still happy? That's great.
I can't believe, again, as I said, someone agrees to have sex with me.
Well, you know, she's an odd woman. She's a fascinating person. She's got unusual taste, and that's great. Yeah. It works.
You know what? I talk about charity and...
And she's artistic. She likes an unusual shape and a juxtaposition of forms and stuff.
How do you know so much about what I look like down there?
I don't know if that's what you look like down there. It's a guess.
Yeah.
Based on what you've told me. And also, you removed all your hair from there.
Yeah,
apparently.
There's nothing.
Do you know what?
And skin. I'm in so much pain right now.
Oh, no, that's bad.
Is this what you end up talking to Leno about?
We talked about cars, I think, a little bit. I hope he doesn't die
from what he's doing.
He's okay. He's all right.
I was like, I hope this is becoming a pattern now.
Well, he showed me. He said, do you want to see the photographs of the operation? I'm like, no, but yeah. So on his phone, he has photographs of while they're fixing his face after the burns and the surgical procedure. I was like, who's taking the photographs, Jamin? It's some doctor. I don't know. He's taking the photographs. I said, yeah, take these photographs. And he shows his face with all the, I mean, it's crazy. It's like.
And then how many months later did he wipe out on the motorcycle?
It was like 2 months. It was like, but you're a car guy, aren't you?
I don't.
Are you motorcycles too?
No.
No, me neither. No, I'm done with that shit.
That is a young man's game. That is a game to play when you don't have kids.
You know, it is. I had an accident when I was 40. You ever have an accident on a motorbike?
No. Jesus. I've had bike accidents, but I can't imagine what it would be like going triple the speed.
It's unbelievable, man. I've been hit by some big fucking dudes, and so have you. You played football, right? So
yeah.
It's worse than that. It's worse than that, and you aren't. And I was, oh my God, I was like, oh, it's so painful. And then about, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks ago, I fell off a horse.
What the fuck were you doing on a horse?
I like being on horses.
Okay.
You know, Megan has horses. So
well, that's true.
So I have to like.
But you fell off.
I fell off the horse.
That's a big fall.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, I'm too old for this now. Because when I was lying on the ground, I thought, this could be it.
So, how did you fall off the horse?
Well, you know, it's a long story, but basically the girth was a little tight. It nipped underneath his little leg thing. He bucked and threw me right off. Big horse too. Yeah, I know. But I was only winded because I landed in sand. But I fell. You know, have you ever been, you know when you get winded, when you fall?
Yeah, when you get the... Yeah.
And you think, I think my spine's gone. I think that's it. Yeah, I think I'm
done.
You can't
breathe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I don't play basketball now because I get scared.
Well, you got to do something. Like, you're in the gym or something.
I work out every day.
Right.
And I play tennis now because you can't run into other people playing tennis unless you're playing doubles.
Okay. Do you like the tennis?
I love it so much.
Jesus.
I stopped running because I have a torn meniscus, but I can still.
You still move around the tennis court?
Yeah, I just got to hit it really hard so they have to move.
Do you know, it's funny, I really don't care for tennis.
It's the sport of your land.
No, wasn't it Henry VIII played tennis?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Shakespeare mentioned it.
I think the thing about tennis is it seems like a sort of, it feels like it's a petty situation. Like, you take the ball. No, you take the ball. No, you take the ball. It's like, somebody just keep the ball.
You could make the same argument about soccer.
Yes.
They're like, why do you keep passing it backwards?
Yeah, you know, you could. I'm not lying. I feel like I'm not very connected to sport in a big way. I like to run.
Do you go for runs?
I do go for runs.
And you can still run well. Your knees are all right?
It's a little trickier than it used to be. I have to slow down. Yeah.
It's a lot of pounding. No, I think with tennis.
I do a lot of pounding and I go for a run.
Yeah. See, I think I think tennis is like a boxing match because it's.
I used to do that a lot too.
See?
Yeah.
You ever box? I never boxed.
Oh, you'd love it, man.
I should have, but I would be all messed up.
No. You can box without, you wear some stuff and box with someone that you pay to not hurt you. It works out, especially in LA.
Well, yeah, there's all sorts of gyms with white guys and
who
are like I can do it.
Go to Karen Boxing, you know, with all the white women of a certain age are out boxer.
They're just yelling at people that
what are you
doing in this neighborhood?
Get out of here. And they punch and stuff.
You know how you can make your summer vacation better? Is with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding and loungewear. It's like being at home, but also going away. It's great. And now you can get 35% off. You can get the unmatched softness. It's really as buttery smoothness of Cozy Earth's bedding. It's better than the finest hotels, and you get a really good night's sleep on your travels. And that's important. It's travel friendly. It's hassle free. Cozy Earth's bedding comes in adorable totes, making it the perfect companion for your adventures near and far. You can stay cool and comfy during long flights, and you know what that's like, with the Cozy Earth temperature regulating bamboo joggers and pullover crew. Makes you look cool when you're traveling. I like it. Well, as cool as I can look when I'm traveling. So discover your next destination for ultimate comfort at Cozy Earth. Visit CozyEarth.com and use our code JOY at checkout and you'll get 35% off. And let them know we sent you after the checkout. Promo code JOY. J-O-Y. JOY.
Guess what, Bango?
What's that, Will?
So iHeart is giving us a whole minute to promote our podcast, Part-Time Genius.
I know. That's why I spent my whole week composing a haiku for the occasion. It's about my emotional journey in podcasting over the last 7 years, and it's called Earthquake House.
Mango, I'm going to cut you off right there. Why don't we just tell people about our show instead?
Yeah, that's a better idea. So every week on Part-Time Genius, we feed our curiosity by answering the world's most important questions. Things like, when did America start dialing 911? Is William Shatner's best acting work in Esperanto? Also, what happened to Esperanto?
Plus, we cover questions like how Chinese is your Chinese food? How do dollar stores stay in business? And of course, is there an Illuminati of cheese?
There absolutely is, and we are risking our lives by talking about it. But if you love mind-blowing facts, incredible history, and really bad jokes, make your brains happy and tune in to Part-Time Genius.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I have a friend. His name's Duffy Culligan, and he's a terrifyingly good boxer.
Sounds already good. Yeah, Duffy Culligan.
Like a boxer?
And in the other corner, Duffy Culligan. No, Culligan's out of Tipperary, and it's going to be a hard match today. It's going to be a hard match.
He got his nose broken.
Yeah.
So he showed up to school. He showed up to, our kids used to go to the same school, everyone. Yeah. He just showed up. You had gone by then. It looked like, that someone had poured blood under his skin and it spread out over his face.
See, I never did that kind of boxing. That's real boxing. I used to box with a Mexican guy in California. He used to come to the house and he would train me. And I'd box, but we'd spar.
He would come to your home.
He would come to the house and we would box in the backyard. And
I like how you paid a guy to try to beat you up.
No. Here's the thing. I paid him money so that he wouldn't beat me up because he could have beat me up.
Right.
But I always knew I was hitting him really hard because when I really fucking let fly, like if I really got him well, he'd go like this. Good. And he would smile.
That's when you know you're dealing with. That's why I was like, when people get into fights on the street, I'm like, you have no idea who you're dealing with.
Yeah.
You don't know what could happen.
No, it's bad. Were you ever a scrapper when you were a kid?
I got into I went to Catholic school. So we were always. Yeah. There was a lot of tackle football with no pads during recess, and you never knew. But the last, I guess it was post-college, that I challenged someone to fight.
To a duel?
I was like, I challenge thee, and I had
threw down your glove
beautiful
and everything.
Pistols that I had brought, and we won. I was on a co-ed softball team, and the one of the guys decided not to slide into second. He just ran over this nice woman who was our second baseman. And I was like, I'm seeing red. I'm going to go kill someone. And
You lost your temper.
That was like the last time. I was like, you need to be careful. So, but no, I feel like there's less, maybe there's more fist fights. I don't know. I got into a few, but I wasn't any good. You know, it always ended up on the ground, like rolling around.
Yeah, I think that, I don't know. I mean, like you're 10 years younger than me, something like that, right?
I literally am.
Right. So
you have way better hair.
Well, you're in much better shape.
That's
so, you know, I'm like a hairy, out of shape alien.
You were not out of shape.
I'm a little out of shape.
All right.
I like yesterday when I went crazy on the candy drawer in the hotel like a raccoon. It was bad. It was bad.
Had you eaten?
No, I had gone like 24 hours.
Yeah,
food.
So your body was like.
I was just crazy.
Did you get into a lot of fights?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Would you start fights or
no,
did you just
no.
find yourself in the middle of
it? Yeah, it was kind of like de rigueur. It was kind of like having a Twitter account when I was growing up, but like everybody.
It's X.
Oh, yeah. Well, Twix, I call it now.
Oh. That's
it's
way better.
Twitter and X, you mix them together. Twix. I'm going to send out a Twix.
And then you get a Twix bar.
Yeah, and then you get a Twix. You get a little candy bar. Go crazy on it like a raccoon.
This is a great idea.
It's working well
for
me.
Wait, when's the last time you swung or were swung at not in a boxing lesson? Or in a, like, in like, I'm in a fight?
I think it'd probably be about 1990.
Okay.
Yeah, because I got sober in 1992. And by the time it was 1990, I was already losing badly in every aggressive situation.
Well, were they as intoxicated?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. There was no way that anybody sober was going to seriously get in a fight with me because it would be, it'd be taking advantage of something.
You got out of drinking at the right time.
Yes.
Because you perpetually when people get out of it late, they look like their skin is a leather bag. You don't have any of that.
Well, you were talking about guys that were athletes at the same time as you, and they go crazy and they stop working out and they just eat the same amount of calories and go and just end up like, well, I see guys that I used to hang with who I drank with who never stopped.
Right.
And it's like crazy. They're like, they can't walk and stuff.
And they're your age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, and they come up and go, we are the same age. And I'm like, are we though? And then they're like, you live in California. I went, it's not really about California.
Yeah.
It's a little more complicated than just going to California.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of meth here.
Yeah. There is, although that keeps you young, apparently.
It does. It really keeps the heart rate up and keeps you skinny.
So let me ask you this. So you went to Catholic school, right?
I did.
Are you still a Catholic?
No. I mean,
no, they do say once a Catholic. So,
well, I still have the guilt,
and right?
That's, I'll be running away from that for a long time, and some of the shame.
But you're not. Did you raise the? Well, our boys went to the same school, and that wasn't. That was a secular.
That's
school.
That's well, yes, they rented that.
Yeah,
Episcopalian.
Right, but it was a secular, you know, school. Learning experience. There was no kind of.
Yeah. No, and I, to this day, I love the ritual of the Catholic Mass.
Yeah.
And my wife and I are basically Presbyterians now.
Oh.
And I like the ritual, but boy, it is, yeah, it's from a, you know, a guy that said, give up all your possessions. And,
I know.
And then you go to the Vatican, you're like, man, yeah. Sell one of these paintings and feed Brazil.
I know. It is.
So it's a bit of a...
little tricky.
It's a juxtaposition.
I think what it is, because I've become fascinated with Christianity. As I get older, I think about dying more. I don't know if that's... You're still a bit young for that.
Oh, no, I've been thinking about it for 25 years.
Really?
Yeah, as soon as I hit 21, I was like, I'm dead. It's over.
It's kind of a thing. I mean, I do think about it. So, you know, I'm intrigued by Christianity. And as you say, it started with like, give up all your stuff and walk around and just like.
Love people.
Yeah.
Didn't talk about gay people, never mentioned any of that stuff. Wasn't part of it.
But what happened, I think, is when, I think the equivalent of when Constantine co-opted Christianity into the empire, right? Roman Empire. And it became the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah.
I think that's like when, and it hasn't happened yet, but it'll happen in the next couple of years, when Starbucks opens a store at Burning Man, it's a similar type of co-option. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's like it's the incorporation of something that was wildly counterculture being brought further and further into the mainstream until it is available on Amazon Prime.
So do you think Peter, one of the apostles, would like it was already getting bad? Like as far, he was like, this is not how it used to be. Guys, we should definitely not have this way too nice.
Definitely. I mean, I think the minute they started writing the Gospels and they were kind of like, they started writing the Gospels so that they were like the Roman involvement. They kind of like tried to move that out like Pontius Pilate didn't really want to kill Jesus.
No.
Pontius Pilate wouldn't even think about it. He was killing people all over the place. He was like thousands, like he crucified more people than you've had candy bars. He crucified thousands of people, Pontius Pilate. I'd like to think I haven't had that many candy bars. Well, okay, that was a bad example. That candy bars.
Celery sticks,
yeah.
But then he gave up Barabbas.
Yeah, and that whole thing, I mean, I feel like a lot of it has been lost in this storytelling over time.
Do you think when that one pope, there's a couple that led armies... Do you think they were like, it seems, well, whatever. Okay, we're cool.
Do you know what I love about, because I love the history of the popes. There was, when they had the cadaver synod, do you know what that meant?
No.
Oh, it was great. So one, I can't remember the exact popes, and I look forward to your emails and Twixes, but there was one pope who was really mad at another pope. Yeah, these things happen. So the pope that was mad at the other pope, this pope dies, and the other pope that was mad at him is now the new pope.
Right.
Right? So he digs up the cadaver of the, you know, the body of the other pope. They bring the decomposing corpse into the courtroom and put it on trial. And of course he loses. He's found guilty.
You're kidding.
Didn't get a chance to speak for himself.
Well, his lawyer was also dead. Which... Yeah,
there was that. But it's really
freaky. How about, I think
there
was one that was like a teenage pope, no joke, and
really?
Turned it into a brothel at
now
one point.
That's a TV show.
How about the time when there was two popes, the ones in France... And then the ones in Italy, because they were just mad. But they made the Château Neuf du Pape, which is just a wonderful
wine. Is that where that comes from?
Yeah, because they were like, these are the special grapes. It's the Château of the Pope. And
I did like that. Even when I was drinking, I remember that from back in the day.
Pinot Noir grapes, they really nailed it.
I said to Megan once, just as a young voice, she was drinking a fancy wine. I went, oh, you know what? If I ever drink again, I'm going to start drinking that. And she went, yeah, you'll last half an hour on this. Then it'd be fucking hairspray by the end of the day.
Straight to ethanol.
But it is.
Would you, if you know you're on your, let's say you have like, you're dying, death, you're on your deathbed, and you're like, well, I guess I'll have a whiskey
drink.
Sour.
You know.
Kind of like, you know, like Clint Eastwood and, you know.
Unforgiven.
Yeah, Unforgiven.
Yeah,
when he realized like, oh yeah, I'm going to die, so I'm just going to start drinking again.
Yeah, no, that, I read that completely differently in Unforgiven. That's interesting you said that. Because when I love that movie, and I think it is a study of alcoholism.
Oh.
Because when he knows he's going to get in that gunfight and he's going to die, but really what he thinks, I'm going to have to fucking kill people.
Oh.
And so I read it as he's like, I can't fucking do this sober. I can't fucking.
Oh, no. I was just like, well, yeah, he knows he's going to die. So
drink
the
thing.
Why not?
No,
I don't make him a better gunfighter.
But it's interesting. Him up. No, I don't think I would. I don't stay sober. It's not a chore to stay sober. I stay sober because I like it. So but I think, though, there are drugs around. Like, I'm so glad I missed the opiate thing.
Right.
Because that shit.
It will kill you. I mean, they'll all kill you.
Well, sure, but the opiate stuff, I mean, I had a medical procedure for a dental thing, and they gave me one under supervision for like extreme pain. And I was like, my God, this is like 15 years ago. And I still think about it.
Wow.
Like one, you know, and it was, you know, the guy was like giving it to me with gloves, and it was a smoking test tube and stuff like that. I'm still like, no, I can understand how people get consumed by that shit.
But when you took it, so you're in crushing pain. I'm assuming mm-hmm. you either had like some sort of root canal.
It was a root canal that had become,
which is one of the most painful.
It was agony. Yeah.
And you did it without anesthesia?
No,
you got all that.
I got the anesthesia, but there was something wrong afterwards, after the procedure. So they had to bring the pain down for a minute. And they did.
And was it like, oh, I could get used to this high, or thank God for this relief from this crushing pain in my mouth?
Not entirely sure. That's the thing. And I still think about it because like the removal of the pain was amazing. And I'm so grateful that I live in a time yep. when that could happen. But there was also a feeling of ecstasy, which I feel probably was not connected to the removal of the pain.
Yeah, the doctor was like, you tried to order a gin and tonic 10 minutes after you
took
it.
There was a lot of, you know, I struggled with it about taking it, and eventually I'm like, look, there's no way around this. You're going to have to take it. Because I don't like to take anything.
Right.
It's dangerous for me.
I take an Advil even if I think I'm going to be sore.
Advil is fine. I'm cool with Advil. I'm also not a doctor. You know, if a doctor says, no, you got to take something, you got to take it. I mean, there's a weird thing. This happens in LA a lot. People think because they go to yoga, they're a doctor or,
oh yeah,
you know, I mean, it's like, you're not a fucking doctor.
No. I know. Yeah. They do a Google search and they're like,
yeah,
I found some stuff out. I feel bad for doctors that are like, yeah, I went to school for 8 years.
Yeah.
Somehow it wasn't just Google searches.
Yeah. It's also like, if you look up, do you ever do this when, like, if you look up the possible adverse reactions to Advil?
Yeah.
You could terrify yourself. That's what the internet is.
Yeah, it's terrifying. It's the dark web all of a sudden.
Do you have, I think you do have a pretty strong social media presence, don't you? Don't you do all that?
Yeah, I do all that shit.
Yeah. See, I do it too, but I don't really. Like, I'm not connected to it. There's like a bunch of people that do it and they pretend they're me. And I'm like, yeah, I don't really.
Well, you gotta get rid of those people.
No. I pay them.
Oh.
Yeah, I pay them. I'm like, no, you go ahead and...
Do they ever post something you're like, that's not...
No, they run it by me most of the time.
Is that because you don't want to do it or you just...
I don't want to connect with it. It's crazy. It's crazy time. You know, people out there, you know, talking to you, you know, unsolicited, giving your opinions and stuff. I'm like, no, I don't...
Oh, I don't read anything.
Oh, that's good.
I just send it out.
That's fine. That's just like taking a shit in the pool and then leaving.
That is exactly what I do.
I love that.
When it started... Like, I was like, oh, this person. Well, there was a time when this is, for whatever reason, William Shatner would tweet at Norm Macdonald and I telling us how unfunny we were.
You and Norm are two of the funniest guys who ever lived. Norm, God rest him. But I mean.
That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. But
you're hilarious, man.
God bless you. But no, it was like William Shatner was, I was like, oh no, people are going to know that William Shatner. Of course, I retweeted it and said, big fan. But but I was like, I was like worried about it for a moment. And then I was like, ah, fuck all this. But yeah. But
have you squared it up with William Shatner?
When I met him at Betty White's 90th.
Yeah,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Betty White's 90th.
Yeah.
I walked up and I go, hi, Mr. Shatner. I put my hand out and he looked at it and then just stared at me. Jesus. And I was like, what did I ever do to you?
Jesus, Bill. It's funny because I'm quite friendly with William Shatner.
Will you tell him hello?
He gets an idea in his head, though. I mean, it is fucking crazy.
I feel like the penis rocket was a big reset for him when he learned that the abyss of space was pretty depressing.
But that was before after Betty White's 90.
Yeah, it was after. This was like last year he went up in that thing.
Oh, my God. And he was crying when he came back?
Yeah, he was like, it's way more. Captain Kirk went up there and was like, oh, we're tiny. Yeah. We're just barely holding on to this rock.
Well, I got that from acid. I don't need to go there.
Yeah. Recently?
No, bless you.
But now, like, what is it? The microdosing is now the big.
Yeah, I'm not a microdosing sort of a guy. I'm a more macrodosing sort of a guy. I can't be left alone with a fucking candy bar. You think, how am I going to microdose? I can't do it.
Well, do you think, I mean, not that you replaced it because you were a very healthy person, but the stand up.
It does, in a way.
Yeah, that's, I love that it has on stage.
It has a kind of zen thing about it. I remember reading an interview with Michael Jackson, controversial figure, but talking about his performance, and he said he was so comfortable on stage, he feels like he could sleep there. Now, that could, of course, have been the propofol, but also I understand it, though. I get very comfortable on stage.
Yeah.
You get that way, too?
I love it so much. I go, oh, this is all the stress and all the anxiety falls away.
When you were doing The Soup, because I remember you started The Soup maybe a year or something before I started in Late Night, something like that.
Started in fits and starts in 2004.
Right. And I started in Late Night 2005. So that,
right on.
And I remember thinking, like, this guy is the only one that's doing anything like I'm doing. This is, because all the rest, I felt like everyone else is, there's a style of doing late night that exists as it's almost like a genre. And you weren't doing that. And I didn't do it either because I didn't know. And I think you.
When you would grab the camera, I was like, oh, that's a good, that I should have done that. You'd get up there and I would.
But we had about the same budget though. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, well, you could afford a talking skeleton though.
Eventually, not right away. I was 4 years in before I got the talking skeleton.
Well, you didn't have to shoot around pillars because it was a converted lobby. But then Ryan Seacrest showed up and all of a sudden began pouring millions of dollars into the studio. I'm like, what the fuck, this whole time?
You know, it's funny when Lily Tomlin was on the Late Night Show, she came in and she went, wow, this place used to be a cupboard. It was the wardrobe room.
That's
my studio. I mean, I remember saying to you the first time you were on my Late Night Show, I said to you, dude, you should do this. You should do this thing. Mm. And I never got the sense that you were interested in doing that.
I never thought I was going to do The Soup. So I always wanted to be an actor. And then I was like, well, maybe I'm better at this than acting.
You're a good actor. I've seen you act like Community. You're awesome in that show.
That was a dream come true.
That's a
great
show.
Too bad for Donald Glover and the way his career has fizzled.
Yeah, but, I know. But, you know, it's
just, you know, so you win some, you lose some. I will say that I was torn. I've never really I've thought about it. And I'm like, oh, that would have been, but then I have some self-loathing that really can kick in. So you never know which version of me you're going to get.
Well, self-loathing, it will work for you in late night. You have to kind of hate yourself a little bit to just go and do it all the time.
Yeah, it's rare. It's odd if you see a comedian go, fucking nailed it, did it again. I'm like, you did? Oh, shit, good for you. I can't believe how confident you are.
Yeah, some are like that, but they're not funny. Mm. You know, it's an odd business. Would you do it now, do you think?
I don't. I'm way too old.
Oh, bollocks. It doesn't, the rules are all changed now.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I realize with The Soup how much you do so many of them that you get, like when people send me clips, I was like, I have no recollection of that, but that was pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Tons of that.
Yeah. And I was like, the pattern of that was really fun. And I was like, I miss that consistency. I mean, but believe me, with the new, like, I host a baking show and I fucking love it. So that definitely tickles that little muscle, guys.
Okay.
Nice. But when I see like the guys, you know, like they're so fucking good. And I just don't know if I have the, I would like to, I mean, you were part of the golden age of like the, like when everybody was clicking and
I think you too though. I think The Soup was part of that too. I don't think The Soup wasn't. I mean, I
feel like I got paid less than everybody though.
Yeah, you probably did. But I mean, that's but you sorted that out with Community and
yeah, it was good times.
Yeah, and all the other stuff, the like Spy Kids movies and all that kind of stuff.
Well, thank you. There's people still like, so Jessica Alba played your wife. How was that? How did that work? Why would someone like that agree to be with you?
And that's a whole separate. I mean, why are you saying that? You're extremely handsome and you're in great shape.
I'm trying to get you to say these things and it's working.
Yeah, I see. Is that catfishing? No, that's bat fishing. It's like catfishing, but it's slightly different.
Is bat or dog fishing?
Or maybe dog fishing, or it might just be fishing.
Guess what, Bango?
What's that, Will?
So iHeart is giving us a whole minute to promote our podcast, Part-Time Genius.
I know. That's why I spent my whole week composing a haiku for the occasion. It's about my emotional journey in podcasting over the last 7 years, and it's called Earthquake House.
Mango, I'm going to cut you off right there. Why don't we just tell people about our show instead?
Yeah, that's a better idea. So every week on Part-Time Genius, we feed our curiosity by answering the world's most important questions. Things like, when did America start dialing 911? Is William Shatner's best acting work in Esperanto? Also, what happened to Esperanto?
Plus, we cover questions like how Chinese is your Chinese food? How do dollar stores stay in business? And of course, is there an Illuminati of cheese?
There absolutely is, and we are risking our lives by talking about it. But if you love mind-blowing facts, incredible history, and really bad jokes, make your brains happy and tune in to Part-Time Genius.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, then look no further than the Marketing School podcast hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast in the United States and number 15 on business in the United States. And it has amazing guests such as Alex Hormozi, Layla Hormozi, Cody Sanchez. We pull in these amazing interviews with other people that are not only great marketers, but actual operators. And the icing on the cake is Neil and myself were also operators as well. So we share learnings from the trenches. We share secrets that we otherwise wouldn't be sharing with other people. And we also share other advantages that will help you get ahead of your competition. So all you have to do is listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you ever go fishing?
Not anymore. I'm too impatient. It's hard for me to go to movies.
I hear you.
I was like, we're just going to sit here for 2 hours?
There are Instagram posts. I'm like, too long. Yeah, I know. It's bad. I do still read a book from time to time.
You will sit and good for you. I can't read. Which,
are you dyslexic?
Very.
I didn't know that.
Way better than I used to be. But just on the way here, I am in the middle of a novel. And I'll put it on when I'm doing the dishes. I'll put it on when I'm cooking. I'll do it.
So you like audiobooks?
Yes.
But audiobooks are great.
Greatest thing.
That's worth the digital technology just for that.
Yeah. I will trade the human trafficking and Silk Road and arms dealing for Audible.
No, you went too far, man. And I know you're joking.
And Shazam. I'm still amazed. I was like, this thing knows my songs.
Yeah.
It's just going to identify this song. It's great. No. And yes, that has changed my life. What's the book you read?
The last book I read, I think, hang on a second.
Dianetics.
Yeah. I never got around to that. I did get a few overtures from them back in the day.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, did you ever go to the brunch?
No,
I
politely declined. It's not my thing. I'm not very good at organized religion. I don't really care for it much. I feel like once dogma's involved of any type, you know, I kind of like shy away from it. We all do this now. Oh, yeah. Fucking do we?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I grew up during punk rock and we don't all fucking do this.
No. But we all are going to spike our hair and wear the same leather jackets.
Nah, but we're different. But we're a different cult.
We're all different, except when we go to that concert, we all look the same.
I know. It's kind of funny. It's like when people get mad at young, because your kids, they're young, they'll be in that kind of rebellion thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't want to, you know, force you into talking about your kids, but
I'm fine.
But I do notice with, you know, my own children that they're slightly disappointed that I don't get as outraged as maybe other parents do about their world.
Yeah.
Which is a tricky one. I mean, they're very dogmatic, the kids right now. I mean, they have a lot of orthodoxy that needs to be.
Did your parents get on you about your...
Yeah. I used to have to, when I was like 15, punk rock hit, and I used to go out for the evening to see my buddies. And then there was a bridge near our house. Now go underneath the bridge and change into punk rock clothes. Like, you know,
and you'd like stuff your other clothes.
I'd put the other clothes under the bridge and then go. And of course you come back and a hobo's taking it and you have to go home. But there's like a hobo wearing a school uniform somewhere.
I feel like that, the punk rock scene in Great Britain where it started was such a break.
Oh my God, it was huge.
I don't know if I mean, we went from glam rock to grunge.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Which was the opposite, which was, you know, glam rock was hair and full makeup down to, then it was just plaid shirts and...
Which would be right about the exact moment for you, because you're in Seattle or that area, you're in Washington State, right?
Yeah.
And grunge, you must have been totally into that.
I was. Yeah. I watched Alice in Chains get booed off stage.
What?
Because the next band is the band called the Young Fresh Fellows, was the band that everyone wanted to see. And I remember Lane Staley going like, fuck you, this is great music. And they were like, the crowd was like, fuck you, get off. And then it all worked out for Alice in Chains.
Did you ever get booed off stage?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. When did you get booed off stage?
It was at the Power 106 like lineup in Anaheim at like an 8,000 person outdoor stadium.
Oh, sweet.
And they were not fans. And
when was this?
This is probably 2009 or eight.
Nice.
And I don't know what you're like when you start getting booed. I have to fight.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
So I turned the clock around and I was like, I'm staying up here for this long. And which was not a great move either.
Perfect.
And there was agents trying to poach me there, and they were all ran away.
They didn't poach you after
they
that?
Didn't. They were like, oh, that's not what we expected. And so it was, what about you?
My first stand-up was Scottish Week during punk rock at the ICA in London. And basically it was a bunch of Scottish punk rock bands and a bunch of Cockney punks. And they said to me, you should go, you're funny, you go up during when we're changing the bands around and do comedy. So I did. And I thought it would be funny to wear a kilt. And I did, but I was so nervous that my knees were physically shaking. And the Cockneys noticed it and they started shouting, his knees are knocking, his knees are knocking. And it became a chant. And the entire crowd, his knees are knocking, his knees are knocking. And
well, you had the crowd.
Well, they had me, I think.
And there's equipment being changed behind
you. Oh, yeah.
So it's the most distracting.
It was garbage. But here's the thing. And this is the same with you. I went back. See, normal people that are not like us would have an experience like that and go, I don't need to do that again.
Yeah.
And you went back. Why?
Well, but I don't know why. I mean, I always have to, I'm extremely competitive. So.
But that's competitive with the universe at that point.
Yeah. I think I was ready to take them on. I said pretty insulting things. I kept going. And to the point where the show organizer said, you need to get out of here.
Yeah.
I think at one point I was like, raise your hand if you don't have a neck tattoo. And, And then I was like, watch the soup on E, thanks. And
Did your ratings go up after that?
The next day, one of the people that was working for us said, I have, We got like 3,000 emails. Like it was,
wow.
They were people like pissed and then people pissed at the pissed people.
Yeah.
And, but it was, you know, it was another one of those moments where I'm like, maybe I am terrible at this.
Well, what's interesting about that, though, is like now that would be like a viral thing. Everyone would share in your shame.
There was nothing. Yeah. There was no footage. No. Yeah, I mean, thank God.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. I mean, I feel for young performers now. Like, you fuck up, everyone's going to know forever. Like, I did a show once in Dunfermline in Scotland, Carnegie Hall. I've played both Carnegie Halls, the one in Dunfermline in Scotland and the one in New York. The one in New York's a lot easier. The one in Dunfermline, I went on stage, I was really, this before I stopped drinking, and I said, words to the effect of, probably a little more aggressively, where I come from, we talk, in Glasgow, we talk about you people as sheep shaggers, which I always thought was bad until I came here and saw what your women looked like. And fuck, man, they went crazy.
They didn't like it.
They were mad. And they were right to be mad.
Well,
they chased
that me. Was the opener?
Yeah. Yeah, it was ill-advised.
You probably should have bagged on the women in your clan after that.
I probably shouldn't have mentioned women at all, but yeah. These were different times.
And then as they were screaming, were you like, this is what I'm talking about.
See, this is why nobody plays here.
I didn't know Carnegie opened a place in Scotland. Well, he was Scottish.
He was from Scotland. Yeah. They changed. His father was a weaver. And then the weaving business changed. And so they moved to America and he started U.S. Steel. I don't know how it worked out, but I think he made a little money.
He made a little money and he broke a lot of unions. But then he felt really guilty and started building shit for everybody. Yeah. I was like, you treated these, they can't even get to the library that you built there because they're working for 14 hours.
It's definitely the Jungian duality yet again. And here we come full circle.
You know what?
It's here a show about Jungian duality. Maybe we should call it that rather than joy.
When did Carl Jung die?
1961.
Wow. How did you know that?
I'm a huge Jungian.
Oh.
Very interested in
Carl Jung. You record your dreams?
I used to, but I found that I was manipulating them and I stopped doing it. Have you ever done that? Kept a dream journal?
I can't hardly write down
My
name on a form. So,
well, you could audio it. You could you could speak. But the truth is, I stopped doing it because I found that I could control them.
Oh.
Which felt weirdly counterproductive. I didn't like it.
Because you were like, tonight I'm going to have this crazy dream where...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's almost like...
Mary Poppins would land on my new sports car.
Wait, you read my dream journal?
Well, I can go in and out of people's dreams while they're asleep.
Now that would be cool.
I don't know if you saw Dreamscape.
Was that in Dreamscape?
Yeah.
I thought that was, isn't that Freddy Krueger? Doesn't he do that?
He does.
Yeah.
But Dreamscape was the first. That was, what's his name? Quaid.
Dennis Quaid? Randy Quaid.
Dennis, not Randy.
Boy. Because Randy Quaid.
What's going on with Randy?
You know, I feel like everybody I know called Randy is a little bit crazy. Do you know any Randys that aren't a little off the beaten track?
I don't. And Randy, of course, you have a different meaning in Britain.
Well, Randy in Britain means very, very horny.
Yeah. I felt bad for everybody named Randy.
There's not that many people named Randy in Britain. There's a lot of guys named Horny. But there's no...
What?
Old Horny McPherson's coming over.
I went to the Horny Chateau. I think he was... you're right. So we don't hear from him anymore, Randy Quaid.
No, I didn't. I never heard from him. And you never get in touch with me.
Yeah. He was very good in that Midnight Express. And he played LBJ and he was great.
What about Independence Day? Wasn't he in Independence Day?
Yeah. Yes,
he was like drunk but flying a plane.
Yeah, I think
that's a terribly bad idea, by the way. You should never do that.
I wasn't ever going to do that.
Well, I don't know. You had a look about you like you were thinking, you know what?
Well, you're in the air. It's not like you can do, and nothing can go wrong.
Well, that's true. Now, as you mentioned it, it's
when was the last time you got behind the yoke of a plane?
Oh, last summer, I think.
All right.
Yeah, I like to fly. I do that.
And you didn't like to fly.
I didn't like to fly, and then I learned to fly because I was ashamed by Kurt Russell, of all people. He was on the show, and I was talking about I didn't like flying. He was like, it's bullshit. You're just a control freak. I was like, oh, really? He went, yeah. And then he he got me in touch with a flight instructor and I learned to fly a bit. And then I went flying with Kurt Russell when I only had about 8 hours of flying experience.
Wow.
And you can't cry in front of Snake Plissken. It's not cool. No.
And did you think like, boy, if this goes down, whose name's going to be listed first?
Oh man, I wouldn't even be mentioned. It'd be like Kurt Russell and friend.
And Scottish.
But maybe friend would be nice. Yeah. Hey. Passenger.
Yeah, I guess it would be. I flew on a plane from a Comic-Con with the cast of Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Oh,
and like, LeVar Burton's right there. And I'm like, LeVar's name would be first because Patrick Stewart's not on board.
Yeah.
And I was like, how is this going to go?
I don't think thoughts like that are helpful.
I don't think they're not helpful.
Well, that's fair enough, as long as it entertains you. So where were you flying from? You're flying from San Diego to where?
We were in, North Carolina.
For a Comic-Con, they have them there too?
They have them everywhere, the planet.
Do you do them for community? Is that a Comic-Con thing?
I've only done two.
Right.
And they're like, oh, you can make this. And I was like, all I do is talk all day anyway. So it's talking to people and using a lot of hand sanitizer.
You're talking to me about this fucking podcast right now. People See? Say to me, yeah. like, why are you doing a podcast? I'm like, oh, no reason.
No reason at all. You don't like money.
Yeah. Actually, it's not a hard thing. It's not a chore to talk to people. I mean, like, the rule is, for me, like, you just talk to people you like and then you're cool.
Do you talk to people you don't know and have to do a bunch of research?
No, I mean, even if I don't know someone, I don't do research anyway. Because the way I figure it, and this is what I always thought about in late night too, like, I'll just ask because we're going to talk about it anyway.
Yeah.
So like when people say, oh, did you see Steve Carell's movie? I'm like, no, I'll ask him about it. He said, well, you should see it before he gets here. Well, then I'll already know and it'll be fake. I'll just ask him what the movie's about and I'll genuinely be asking him what it's about. He's not an idiot. He'll be able to tell me.
Yeah, and you shouldn't expect everybody to just watch, like read the book and watch all that. Yeah, that's...
No, that's crazy. I remember Salman Rushdie was on the late night show. He was on the late night show a lot and I was like, I haven't read the book, man. I read Satanic Verses. He went, did you like it? I went, yeah, it's amazing. And he went, okay, so this other one's pretty good. And then he just talked about it.
Yeah.
He didn't expect me to read his, well, maybe he did, and he was just being polite.
I remember when Larry King said to Jim Carrey, when he was promoting The Majestic, he goes, Jim, I've watched half of this movie. And I was like, what an injury. And Jim Carrey was like, half, Larry? And he's like, I fell asleep and I'm going to watch the rest later. And he was like, oh, thanks. But I was like, I think half is worse.
That is worse
than none.
But I think that is, did you ever do it when you had guests on The Soup? Would you like study them a little bit?
I would. Well, we would look into, like, sometimes we would get pop stars from
really big stars,
South America.
Oh,
and
right,
I'd be
okay.
like,
don't know anything about that.
And then like, he dated Jennifer Aniston for 10 minutes. I was like, all right, well, great. So then we would have them on, like before Slumdog Millionaire became a thing, we had a few, because we could always get people
on the way up.
Like on, yes.
Yeah. On the way up or on the way down.
But that, we would never.
That's whoever I go as well. Occasionally get people who are in the zone.
Yeah,
but,
once in a while.
Yeah.
We would put offers out to anybody. They're like, sure. What did Elton John say? And they're like, we have not heard back.
Yeah.
But I will say, when Taylor Swift, she was only booking, you know, Staples Center at this point. We reached out like, well, maybe she'll come on. And then her people actually got back and they're like, she can't come on, but if you guys want tickets to the show. And I was like, oh, great. Now she's aces in my book for the rest. Because she was one of the only huge stars that ever got back to us.
I think she's pretty good news, Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Like, she's the real deal. She's like Dolly Parton. She can write and she can do it all. And she's super talented. And I'm kind of impressed.
Yeah, she's, and everyone I know that has gone to her show.
Yeah.
People my age. And this one, I was like, she's the Beatles. And I was
maybe,
like,
maybe.
They're like, she's started a movement. And then people will complain. They're like, I've seen her four times. They're like, and people are like, well, it's just the same show over and over. And I'm like, well, that's what everybody does.
That's what
U2 is doing right now. It's not like they can't change the movie they're showing in the background.
You know, it's funny. People say, I'm sure they say that. How did you come up with your comedy? And nobody wants the real answer, which is, I sit alone in a room for a long time with a fucking computer and I work.
Yeah.
And I think and I write it down. Or in your case,
I sit on a plane.
You know, Leonard's dyslexic as well. I mean, he doesn't. Write it down.
Well, that guy, he also, how many days a week is he on stage?
Oh, he never misses the Comedy Magic Club, which is Sunday nights. Every Sunday night.
The only thing that he made him miss it was burning his face off and breaking his legs.
I don't know if he missed it. I think they got him to wheel him in on the gurney. He'd be like,
oh,
what's the deal with
Do you ever
my
do
face?
An impression of Leno to him?
Yeah, I think I have done, but on his show, I don't think I would do it in polite conversation, but I've done it. Yeah. People do it to me all the time. Oh, Craig, oh, Shrek, Fanny right. Donkey. I'm like okay, man, thanks.
I was on that car show showing off my 1990 Toyota Land Cruiser made by Corsetti Cruisers. Oh, that was a plug. And and we were sitting there. Well, the camera's on. Jay's talking. We're talking. And then the camera goes off and we're just kind of quiet. And I was like, Jay, what'd you have for breakfast? And he was like, peanut and jelly sandwich. And I was like, and coffee? And he's like, I drink coffee.
No, he doesn't drink hot liquids.
What? Why?
I know. It's a real thing for him. He's like, no hot liquids. I'm like, what about soup? He's like, no. Soup is a...
What about gazpacho?
That was my question. Doesn't have that either. He's got real weird about liquid. He'll drink sodas.
Like sugar sodas?
Yeah, sugar sodas and water.
Well, for breakfast, he had a glass of like full fat milk. And a peanut butter.
But full fat milk is kind of just like cow soup, basically.
Yeah, it's a milkshake.
Yeah.
And then I was like, what are you going to do for lunch? He's like, In-N-Out burger. And I was like, what did you do yesterday for lunch? He's like, In-N-Out. And I'm like, okay, well.
He knows what he likes, man.
It's working for him.
He knows what he likes, yeah. Well, listen, you're a joy, as always.
It's so good to see you.
Oh, man, it's so good to see you, too.
We've known each other now for a long time.
Yeah,
but
you know, 20 fucking years.
You were always, and continue to be, so fucking kind. Considerate. And
you are, well, you know, all those nice Hollywood showbiz things, but real back to you. Whereas you saying them to me obviously wasn't real because you still live in Los Angeles.
See,
but
I
don't live in Los Angeles anymore. So now if I...
Do you remember when we went to, I think it was Madeo, the Italian restaurant?
Oh, yeah,
and we
of course,
kept hearing, yeah. like we thought was an old lady yelling at Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be, what's his name? The Nutty Professor.
Jerry Lewis.
Yes, it was Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he was holding court.
That's
like,
right.
Yeah, that was going way back.
God. That's right. And then I remember that night. That was weird. You and Sarah were one of the few people that Megan and I would actually go out for dinner with in Hollywood. Because I don't know about you, but it can get a little crazy in this town.
It can get a little crazy.
Yeah.
But then I look at my friends back in Seattle. And I'm like, you all seem half nuts too. So,
oh yeah, everybody's fucking crazy.
You introduced me to Bob Saget.
I did.
Yeah, and I fell in love with that man.
I loved Bob. Bob came over to visit us in Scotland. And we were having a big dinner in this old house that I may or may not own in Scotland. And there was like a lot of people there. And Bob had to go to the bathroom just before we had dinner. So it was like 50 people in this dining room. And Bob went out. I said, all right, look, Bob's in the bathroom. When he comes back, we'll say grace. And then we'll all lift her, you know, left leg and smack her heel with her right hand. And then everyone was like, okay, so Bob came back in. I said, oh, Bob, you're just in time for grace. And we all said grace. Then we all lifted our left leg and smacked her hand. Bob did the same, didn't mention about it. He's like, total professional. Like, okay.
That's what you do here.
That's what we do here. He fit right in.
Well,
he was a sweetheart, Bob.
He was. He was the only, as I've said, like he would end his texts with like, I love you.
Yeah, that's
I was
right,
like,
yeah.
Eat my balls, but I love you.
Yeah.
And I'd be like,
well, you would only do that if you love someone. Anyway.
You know what? You're right.
Yeah, no,
you got to have some sort of affection.
You can't do angry ball eating. There's no joy in that.
What a weird way to end a podcast, or the greatest way.
I think the greatest way. Good day to you.
Good day to you, Craig
Ferguson. I bid you adieu.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth, no matter who you are, that mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com.
Guess what, Will?
What's that, Mango?
I've been trying to write a promo for our podcast, Part-Time Genius, but even though we've done over 250 episodes, we don't really talk about murders or cults.
I mean, we did just cover the Illuminati of cheese, so I feel like that makes us pretty edgy. We also solve mysteries like how Chinese is your Chinese food and how do dollar stores make money? And then, of course, can you game a dog show?
So what you're saying is everyone should be listening.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.